You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to your latest Wolves Fancast match preview. I'm your host, Little Dan, and as you can see, I've had a bit of a devastating week since that defeat to Coventry. I've had a bit of man flu, and this little man has been absolutely battered and devastated since that Coventry defeat. I haven't even had a chance to shave my beard, as you can see. I've decided, until I see Matheus Cunha play again for Wolves, I'm not going to trim my beard, and we'll see how long it lasts, because there's still a bit of 50-50 on whether he'll feature in the game against Villa on Saturday. There were a couple of videos posted via Matheus Cunha's Instagram and Wolves' Instagram over the last 24-48 hours, which is good to see that he is doing a bit of light running at Compton, doing a bit of ball work with his son Levi or Levi. I believe it's Levi. Some people say it's Levi. Yeah, let's have a quick look at the video.
You back? You ready?
Yeah. Ready to run?
Come and take some pens, huh?
Yeah.
You back? You ready? Yeah. Ready to run?
Come and
take some pens.
I hope you managed to get that video. There, it stalled for you guys. It stalled for me. But I said, just great to see him back. I mean, I love his relationship with his kid. I haven't got any kids, but you see them two together on their social media, and it's a lovely sight to see. And I just think Matheus Cunha is a really lovely bloke. Got the greatest teeth, greatest smile I've ever seen for a Wolves player. Got quite big ears, and I'm all for it. I just can't fault, but there's nothing wrong with the guy. On tonight's show, I've been rambling for a good 2 minutes here. I've got Tom Gibson and Dean joining me. How are you, Tom?
I'm all right, mate. Thank you. I'm happy to be back on, and I'm happy that Matheus Cunha is back in training.
It's massive. He's so key to us. Obviously, the amount of players that we've got out injured at the moment, Pedro Neto, Wangi Chan, Jean-Rick Nabelgaard, Craig Dawson, still 50-50 for the game this weekend. It couldn't have come at a worse time, coming towards the busiest end of the season and then going into a sort of social media rivalry derby against Villa on Saturday. The big players to miss, but Cunha, if we can get him featuring in these last, seven, eight games, however many it is now, it's going to be massively important to see how far we can finish. Because if you look at the league table, folks, we win on Saturday and Man United lose to Brentford in the 8 o'clock kickoff. We're only 3 points behind Man United in six, because Newcastle start the weekend at home to West Ham, who are only 3 points in front of us. It's a massive week. Looking at those fixtures there, Tom, we'll talk a bit more on Villa Wolves in depth after this, but Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoffs, Bournemouth versus Everton, Chelsea versus Burnley, Forest versus Palace, Sheffield United at home to Fulham, and Tottenham versus Luton. Where's your money for a banker win on them Saturday, 3 o'clocks?
Wow. I mean, really, the one that I'd bank on probably Spurs to win, but Luton have got really good fight in them, to be fair, this season. And they have surprised me, but I don't think they've got enough to hold off games. So if I'm to put my money on someone to win from 3 o'clock kickoff, I'd probably go with Tottenham.
Yeah, I think that's the one of the bankers, isn't it, there, Dean? I think a lot of fantasy Premier League players will be lumping on Tottenham players this game week of game week 30. What about yourself, if excluding Spurs, Luton, Dean? Just look at the rest of the fixtures there. You've got Brentford versus Man United at 8 o'clock. I've already mentioned Newcastle versus West Ham. That's a 12:30 kickoff. Liverpool versus Brighton, and concluding the weekend, Man City versus Arsenal. I'd say Liverpool probably should have the edge over Brighton at 2 o'clock on Sunday, but looking towards that Man City Arsenal. Where's your money on that game, Dean?
The final one, it's got to be City at home. But going back to the 3 o'clock, my money would be on Chelsea against Burnley, because Burnley will lose on Saturday, they'll get stuffed, and then they'll beat us 1-0 on Tuesday, which is standard Wolves way. Yeah, for the City game, though, I think it's a massive game, but I think City being at home, the wheels will come off Arsenal if they don't get a result there. But even if it is a draw or Arsenal do sneak it, you still fancy City to bounce back. But could it be the game that derails Arsenal season? Potentially. But yeah, I'd love nothing more than Arsenal tears on the timeline.
What's your feeling on that Man City-Arsenal game, Tom? I'll give you mine after yours.
I mean, massive. Like Dean just said, though, you can never write City off. Really, I think they've proved it the past couple of seasons. The way they just go into a different gear towards the end of the season. Even if they lose this game, if they go and win the rest that they've got by a hefty amount, which what they usually do. But I think being at home plays a lot. So I think it'll end in a draw. I think it'll be like a 2-2 or a 3-3.
It's a huge game in the title race that is on Saturday, because, like you said, Liverpool at home to Brighton. I can't really see Brighton getting a result from that. I think that's going to be the game where Liverpool really cement themselves to finish in the top two, wherever they end up. There's something niggling me in the back of my mind. I think Arsenal might do a number on City this weekend. Obviously, City have got Kyle Walker as a doubt. John Stones didn't look too great with that little bit of knee jarring that happened in the fixture between England and Belgium last night. Erling Haaland, I don't think he had a bit of a problem during the one training session, didn't he, where he limped off?
Yeah, he came off early.
I still think...
We can't have Arsenal Man City.
Dean, it's got to that point, and a lot of people have become shocked about it when I've said it, but it's got to the point now, I'd rather Liverpool win the league than Arsenal. And that's how much Arsenal fans have rankled me over the last 3 to 4 years, because
it's
the one season
every week there's that Martinelli clip comes on, doesn't it, of the double yellow card, and I just they have this infatuation with Wolves, and I don't know where it's come from, because we beat them a couple of times, but they can't win.
That that Willy and Jose challenge always comes up now and again from lockdown.
Yeah, ever since the pandemic era, I think we finished above them, didn't we, the one season?
Yeah.
And I think we had like maybe one or two seasons back-to-back where we were pushing in and around the same places as Arsenal, and they literally just belittled us into, young Wolves, you shouldn't even be in contention with us for these 40 places. That's how much they've fallen from grace. It's been, what, nearly 20 years? It might be the 20-year anniversary since the last won the title. And you still think, with their entitlement on social media, that they should be winning or in the title race every single season, and they're not him in regards to football teams, am they?
I've got three Arsenal fans on my team as well, and they love nothing better than giving their boss a bit of stick when they beat us. So I just can't be doing it, just for that reason. They just can't win the league.
Like I just said, I think Man City just aren't the Man City of recent years. I don't think they've replaced the goals of Mahrez and Gundogan anywhere near well enough with, you mean, cast like sort of Doku. Grealish was there the season before. Grealish had an awful season compared to last. Erling Haaland hasn't really hit the ground running this season, has he? Even though he's still still top goal scorer in the league.
Yeah, massively ahead.
Yeah, it's mad. And obviously, I don't know whether Edison's going to be available the weekend. Ortega was in goal, wasn't he, the previous couple of games. Arsenal recruited quite well this season. I think Declan Rice has been huge for them. Massive. And it seems to me like there's something in the back of my mind that tells me it might be that sort of similar game. Do you remember when Leicester went to City and rolled them over?
Yeah.
It might end up being like that on Sunday. I mean, hopefully not, because for me, guys, Man City winning the league is the best of all evils, isn't it?
Of course it is. Of course. Better the devil, you know.
I mean, I don't want to go to Anfield on the last game of the season to see Liverpool win the title. I mean, it would be great to go to Anfield and somehow cost Liverpool winning the title. I think I'd be up for Arsenal winning the league, you know, if we cost Liverpool the title. But that's the only sort of scenario where I'd be up for it.
Craig Dawson last-minute header.
Or, I mean, it's looking like he's not going to feature again this season, but for Pedro Neto finally to score.
Yeah, I mean,
I know he scored the last time we played, the last game of the season, didn't he? But we ended up losing the game. But if, I mean, just someone random, a 30-yard Nelson Semedo wonder goal. Oh. Liam King gives his 7 out of 10 for scoring the winner. it's a massive game, Man City Arsenal. I think whoever wins that game might have the momentum to go on to win it. I did say before Liverpool Man City, the team who goes on to win that game, the momentum would take them on to win it. They're both true. So maybe this is the game where it finally kicks on in the title race. What's your sort of opinions on what I said earlier, guys, about if we win on Saturday, 3 points behind Man United? Man United still catchable for you, Tom?
Yeah,
100%. We've still got a load of games to play. I know we've got a tough run in. We've still got to play City, Liverpool, Arsenal, I'm pretty sure, which are obviously tough games. But we always have good games against the bigger teams. We always show up against the teams above us, I'd like to say anyway. I think they're definitely catchable. I mean, say we leave Villa Park with 3 points. Like you say, you're just about behind them. And if they say they drop a couple of points or they've got a couple injuries, I know we've got our own, but you've got a couple of players coming back now, Cunha, Bellegarde, these type of players. If there's no reason why we couldn't, there's no reason to write it off, really.
You look from sort of 6th down to 11th, maybe even 12th, Dean. It's still all to play for in that middle block, ain't it?
I look at our fixture and I'm like, oh, we've got a tough run in. It's the next month or so that's make or break for a season. But you look at, we've got a game in hand on West Ham. That puts us level on points. Brighton
are West Ham arm as well.
We've got West Ham to play. We've got Luton to play. We've got Bournemouth to play. These are the games where we need to be getting our points in. And we don't want to go into those last three or four where we've got City, Liverpool, Arsenal, where we need to be getting wins from. Like, I think it's Palace, our last at home game, isn't it? So it's kind of, they'll be safe. They'll be playing for nothing at that point. So you'd like to back us if we've got something to go for. But, you know, you look at the forms on there. So you've got, as is kind of marginally better than Brighton's, it's better than West Ham. So we need to just continue as we are. I know we've got the blip with the injuries, but if we can still, we don't tend to draw too many. It's either a win or a loss, which is better. If you win in 2 out of 4, then you're still ticking over more than a point a game, aren't you? So that's the key, really. Just keep picking the wins at where we can. And then target our home games. Burnley on Tuesday is going to be massive. And then we've got, then you've got to move on. You've got a gap a little bit then, haven't you, where we've got next Saturday. So it's going to be, it's going to be tough. And then we've got that 1 week where we've got like three home games in a week, I think, it's coming up.
Yeah, Luton.
So you look at those three, that's going to be a massive week for our season.
Our season's all riding on our home fixtures for me. Yeah. I think we've got, you look at the league table there, we've got 10 fixtures left to play. We've only got Arsenal and West Ham in the top half at home still to play. You look at our record, we've got a really good record against West Ham at home. It ain't going to be an easy game by, you know, a long way. But you look at our record over recent years against West Ham, we pick up good points against West Ham. We've got the game in hand against West Ham as well. And I mean, you look at our away fixtures, Forest going to be a tough game, but I still think we can get a good result there. You've already mentioned we've got Man City, Liverpool and Burnley away from home, as well as, is there another one? Who's the other away game? Villa this week. Yes, I mean, if you can pick up good points. I mean, I know Arsenal are a good side and we ain't got a good record against them, but at Molineux, I mean, I know we lost our last game against Coventry there. But we've been good at home. We are good at home. And when the bigger teams come, the fans do rally, the players do raise the game. I still think European place is more than feasible this year. If we fall short, we fall short. There's good excuses.
To even be in the conversation at this point of the season is massive. And that Arsenal home game, 8 o'clock, is it 7:30 or something on Saturday night? The place is going to be bouncing.
Yeah.
And that's the perfect fixture time for us to have them at home, because they ain't going to travel very well because of getting home after on the trains after the game that late on a Saturday. And then you've got all day in town. It's just
what was the thing that we had before one of the night games? Them goggles. We need to make sure we wear them goggles again, the players.
Oh, yeah, the day that it was brought in away, wasn't it?
The daytime goggles or something like that.
Yeah, daylight goggles.
Yeah, that the players will wear the goggles and we'll have our beer goggles on for that 8 o'clock Arsenal game on that Saturday night.
The goggles, the goggles everywhere.
I'd like to have an impact in the title race, whether it's, you know, either the two fixtures away to Liverpool and Man City or that Arsenal game. Because I still think, you know, if we can finish eighth, it's an outstanding season. But you look at that league table I've already mentioned, a win on Saturday, you go level with West Ham on 44 points away to Newcastle. You're 3 points behind Man United if they get beat away to Brentford, which is more than feasible.
Yeah.
It's all to play for. It's all in our hands as well. He's got to stick behind the team. Like you said, it was a bit unfortunate and a bit heartbreaking the way that we got beat in the end by Coventry, but we didn't deserve anything from that game, did we? It was tough to watch at times. Charles Assar had probably one of the games of his life, yet still conceded three. Ellie Sims was just an absolute donkey, still managed to score two. When things go against you, it's just classic Wolves, ain't it? And that was one of them days. I thought the atmosphere could have been a lot better. It's all hindsight now. I'm still a bit bemused in Gary O'Neill's pre-match press conference with the illusion that maybe Neto or Bellegarde may have featured, or Cunha was, I think he might have said Cunha was available for the game.
Yeah.
For then you get to sort of 2:05. Sorry, what now was a quarter past 12?
Quarter past 11 or something like that, wasn't it?
So 11 a.m. quarter past 11. Then you see the team line up, and it was deflating, wasn't it, going into that ground, because you knew it was going to be, you know, an uphill task. But I feel like if he would have just played the card, this is what we've got. This is what we're playing with tomorrow, guys. We need your support more than ever. The fans might have been a bit more up for it and rallied a bit more. I still think Wolves on an early kickoff on a Saturday with no pre-match drinking times, just why we can't get up for midday games as a fan base still boggles me. Because
apart from
Coventry had no problems, did they?
Apart from away games, when we're in B71, then we get up for them.
Yeah, it's easier done. Like you've got an extra hour in bed, guys, and Molyneux early midday kickoffs. It doesn't kick on, doesn't it? And as much as the players may have on paper in text let us down, I don't think the fans really played as much part as what they could have. Did a nice TFO display via the old goal pack, and you know, the rally towards the end. But we could have done a lot more as a fan base and a team on Saturday against Coventry. The formation, the setup could have been different. We're all working on hindsight now. What was your biggest disappointment from that Coventry game, Tom? I mean, there's so many. I mean, we lost to a lower league side. It was disappointing, wasn't it? But
you've got to look at so many different things. I mean, I looked at it as, from Gary O'Neill's point of view, it was probably one of the biggest games as a manager that he has had so far. So I think he had a lot of pressure to do with it. I think it being an early kickoff, like we just mentioned, that changes the whole perspective of the game. I thought the atmosphere was really dire. I mean, I was obviously on that day, it was 5 years before when we beat Man United. So then that kind of got me a bit, you know, you think back to that time, going back to Wembley, you're 90 minutes away. And then we got in the ground, and as you say, the team's different. You've got a lot of academy in, which isn't a problem, but you've half got your hopes of Cunha coming back in, of Bellegarde, of these players coming in. They're not there. So it's a bit of a trust issue, really. And then I thought when we had the lead, the atmosphere was fantastic because we all thought we was going to Wembley. The atmosphere was unbelievable. The Bueno chant came out. Everyone was having a party. That's how it should have been from minute zero to 90. We could be saying now that we were going to Wembley because I think the fans play a huge part in the game. There was a time this season where we, until the Man United game, I think we was unbeaten at home for about 8-9 games. You've got to look at your fans. That's your fans bringing you in. And that's what O'Neill used to say in his press conferences, saying that, you know, that they know that we bring them through. So we shouldn't stop that. Do you know what I mean? Especially now, the games we've got to go into Europe, I don't think there's another time where the players are going to need us more, especially when our backs are against the wall. And before the season, everyone backed us to go down.
What sort of players in that Coventry game disappointed you, Dean? I think Mario Lemina was the one for me. He was so key. He's been so key to our season. I mean, he's probably been the most biggest player since you know, last January transfer window under Lopetegui. Him and Craig Dawson, that spine, have been unreal for us. But I thought him and Pablo Sarabia did not give Nathan Fraser the support that he needed. I thought Nathan Fraser was thrown under the bus against Coventry. He was clearly out of his depth in that game, but the support that he was given by the experienced players around him, I felt sorry for Nathan Fraser in the end. I thought Leon Chiwama did an half-decent job when he came on, but he was still relying on, like, you know, 18, 19-year-olds.
It was the first time that Mario had played and didn't look like he knew what he was doing. Usually when they put him in this hybrid against Brighton, it was a very clear tactic. But Coventry just didn't work for one reason or another. I think Kilman, I didn't like Kilman's performance in that game. You're talking about your captain, your lead. I know leaders don't always wear the armband like Mario is, but I think I didn't see enough from him. But for me, the biggest takeaway from the game was when we got to 2-1, it's then criminal to give that away. Like, you've undeservedly got ahead. And there was no reason. Gary O'Neill still had Boober on the bench. But why, even if you want to take Chiwomi off, even if you want to take somebody that's just come on, take Doc back off, it all goes out the window at that point. You've got where you need to get to, just shore things up at the back. But again, that stops with Kilman. And one of the things, especially on the winning goal, it's like a carbon copy of the Man United, the Kobbie Mainoo goal, but for the 4-3. Kilman's just, I don't know what he's like, he's in a long barrier, like he's playing cricket. He's just got his one knee on the floor. And as Josh put in the comments, like, Kilman and Bueno making Sims look like a good... that does tell you everything you need to know about Josh's scouting knowledge, though, to be fair. They'd actually think Sims would be a decent signing, but...
I think it was purely the fact that you looked at sort of Nathan Fraser and Leon Chiwome when they came on, just the physicality and the sort of, you know, professional guile that Sims had.
He's a proper championship striker, something that we'd needed for a while, like that, a different option. You look at the Che Adams talk. He's that type of physical, puts himself about. For a Premier League team, you're never going to have to rely on that person. Look at Luton, for example. They started with Carlton Morris. They've gone away from him a bit lately because they've realised that physical strike is a good impact, but it's not something you can rely on every single week. So I think it showed something that we didn't have. Like in the summer, we looked at cheap ones. Years ago, we looked at Kiefer Moore. It's that type of player that if you're a Premier League club, you bring it on last 15 minutes, just gives you something different angle, different... somebody to occupy defenders, which what Fraser was meant to do. But like you said, they didn't feed him. But there was also times where, particularly Sarabia, you could tell they don't trust him that much. There was passes on and they choose to just play it backwards rather than feed him because they know his level isn't that level yet. He is a top-end League One striker at the moment. So it was like a perfect storm, that game was. We'll look back at it and we'll think, you know what, we probably was a little bit harsh on them, but when it's so raw, like even I think it was yesterday, I got my jacket out there, I wore to the game. I still had that little bag that was off the chair, and it gave me PTSD when I got out. I was like, oh my god, just chuck that in the bin quick time.
Yeah, it's tough. It was a tough day at Molineux. Let's try and be positive for a few seconds. Ryan Aitnori, guys, in that Coventry game, Everyone's talking about Pedro Neto being sold in the summer, João Gomes, you know, Mateus Cunha, if he probably wouldn't have got injured, he probably would have been. Being looked at by some top sides, but Ryan Aitnori, Tom, just gets better and better every game, and he's become so key to this Gary O'Neill setup. Just how good is he, and what sort of money should Wolves be looking for him in the summer if a top side does come in, because Liverpool have been linked?
I mean, you're going to have loads of clubs coming for him in the summer. Price tag, I mean, it's what the club value him at. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's on a decent contract. I'm sure he's still got some length on his contract with Wolves. So if they're in favour, you should be looking at, I'd probably say 60 to 80 million between that mark. But the sort of player he is, I think it's scary to see scary to think, sorry, that Lopetegui wanted to sell him and get Aaron Cresswell in, because that would have been one of the worst transfers, I think, in this club's history, because his talent on the ball is unbelievable. Now, a lot of my mates who don't support Wolves have said, why doesn't he play left wing? Which I understand, because he's so good going forward, but he's also so good defensively. So if you put him left wing, you still kind of want him to defend.
Yes. Yeah, it's all going back to hindsight, isn't it? A lot of people have been clamouring for Ryan Aitnoy to be in that left wing role. I think that Coventry game was probably made for him, wasn't it, Dean? With maybe having Hugo Bueno at left wing back, or, you know, just going with a solid back four and having Lamina in the midfield three, and Lamina, yeah, Dorland, João Gomes in a three.
He's such a unicorn of a left back or a left wing back. Like, if you look at the big clubs now where they play the hybrid, which we do to an extent, but we don't have as much possession. But if you've got a City or an Arsenal and they've got him coming in and joining the midfield and just creating, he just causes havoc. He causes chaos because of he's just so press resistant. Like that clip that going round about him for Algeria. Like, literally, like, he's a wizard with the ball over his feet. And we've got that clause. Angers have got that clause where he can, that they're their old 50%, but there's a cap on that. I think we can buy that out for like 10 million euro or something. So that's probably the first bit of business we need to do in the summer, is get rid of that clause, especially if people are seriously looking at him. But I think Tom's right. You for the type of player he is and how important he is to us, other fans will be like, he's not worth 60 million, 65 or 70. But to our system and to the way that Gary O'Neill sets us up, he is the biggest loss when he's not there, of the whole team. He's just so in everything that we do, defensively, attackingly. Like, he's just so unorthodox in the way he does things. Like, he is mad. Like Gary O'Neill says himself, he's mad. But he's so effective with it as well. And it's the effectiveness that's come in more this season. He's always been the dribbler, whereas now he's picking up goals, picking up assists, he's getting in the box, he's impacting games directly a little bit more in front of the net, which that's the bit that he's adding. If he continues to do that, his ceiling is massive. He can go to the very top.
Yeah, he definitely is that good. Played for Algeria, didn't he, this week? He's going to be, he'll be their captain in a few years' time, because I think more of their senior players are coming towards the end of their career now. Well, now I think Mahrez is ageing now. I can't think who's the other one. They've got another one, haven't they? I can't think. Yeah, he is the future of Algerian football, Ryan Aitnoy is. For me, he was sort of being touted to play for France a few years ago. Obviously, Algeria is the team for him, but he literally could have been France's left-back, couldn't he? He is that good. Let's talk about the team news for Saturday's away fixture to Aston Villa. Everyone knows that Hwangi Chan is still a few weeks away from returning to training. He has been seen doing a bit of gym work in the last few days on his social media. I think Gary O'Neill said about maybe a week or so ago he was still sort of 3, 4, 5 weeks away. So it's going to be a while before you see Hwangi Chan in a Wolves shirt. Same with Pedro Neto. There's a possibility that Pedro Neto probably may have played his last game for Wolves due to that injury. If he makes the last couple of games of the season, it'd be a surprise. But with that hamstring injury, I don't think he'll want to risk it himself with the...
I think he'll only play if he's got a sniff of making the Euro squad. He'll be speaking to Martinez. And if Martinez says, well, you need to play for me to be able to pick you, then I think he'll force himself to play the last couple of games. If he's already out the manager's thinking for that, I don't think he'll even push himself.
I don't think he'll go in the summer, because I simply think that because of his injuries, I don't think clubs are going to want to pay what we want.
I agree with that to a degree. I just still think what we're saying is, I said a few weeks back, I think Wolves should be looking for around 70, 80 million pounds for him before the injury happened. If a club this summer comes in with a 50 million pound bid, are the club going to take that bid? And it wouldn't surprise me if they did, because I think it would.
It, I think, help. If you had a sell on percentage, they'd take it.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like some of the conversations that keep coming out of the club about how, Jeff Shee says that Fosun wants to be self-sufficient. Jeff Shee doesn't want to ask Fosun for money. When a 50 million pound bid comes in for a player who's got an injury record like Pedro Neto has, Will the club begrudgingly accept it, knowing they can try and bring in a few players to help build the squad, which is what's pretty much cost us this season, as it's similar to what happened under Bruno Lage under his first season. They let Adama go out in January. They didn't bring anyone in. And that lack of squad depth in the end cost us, didn't it? And it's pretty much come to bite us on the arse again. So you've already mentioned Matheus Cunha's back in. He's outside training, whether he's actually doing any...
It was a bit odd, that was. Because he put the video on of him on the training ground. But then today, he's put a video of him walking on the beach with his son. So I'm like, is there some kind of voodoo mind games at play where that video at the Compton was actually like a few days ago before he went away on holiday? I know he went to Abu Dhabi last week, but I don't know. It's just a social media and it can never really tell what it is.
Maybe it could have been like from that and he's posted it this week, maybe.
Yeah.
I think there was a bit of mind games, wasn't there, before the Coventry game, whether he was going to feature.
I'm not really sure on
how much impact that would have had to Mark Robbins' team selection, whether Cunha was starting, really. Obviously, you have to be a bit more focused on a player like Cunha's on the pitch, but Wolves weren't really going to set up in much of a different shape, really, was there, whether Cunha was starting or not?
No.
It'll be massive if he can feature the game on Saturday at White Villa, because he's so key to the way that we can build from the back and, you know, carry the ball from deep and literally just create anything out of his own space, can't he? So it'll be massive. Morpus Wolves commented saying, what's your predicted lineup for Saturday, lads? I mentioned earlier, we've only got about 12, 13 players you can probably pick from for a starting lineup. Jose Sarr starts again, doesn't he? You're back. Yep. Your back line pretty much picks itself. Samadou down out, Nori, wing backs, Kilman and Totti. Whether Dawson can return to squad, we still don't know until Gary O'Neill's pretty much press conference, which is likely to be on Friday. I think Santi Breno, as good as he has been in recent weeks, really let himself down, didn't he, against Ellis Sims? So
yeah, I Dawson's think fit. The only worry with Dawson is, I think, the way that Villa play. I might be jumping a little bit ahead, but the way Villa plays, they target stuff down the right. So Diaby or Bailey will naturally pull to the right-hand side. So I think they'll target the space in behind Aitnori and Totti, which therefore you'd want Dawson in the middle because you want him to control and marshal Totti, which I don't think Bueno's quite to that level yet with the communication. But then at the same time, you think about Watkins' pace against Dawson, it gives you a heart attack. So it's very difficult on the balance on which one of them would go with. I think because he's such an experienced pro, you'd have to go with Dawson just if he's fit.
Yeah, I mean, so that's actually back line. If you go with sort of a midfield two again, it's probably going to be Lamina and João Gomes. It's whether Tommy Doyle starts with João Gomes. Like I mentioned, Lamina starts in this hybrid role again, which, you know, it worked quite well against Brighton in the FA Cup. Played brilliantly at home in the 2-1 win against Fulham. So there's no reason why Gary O'Neill might not go with it again, but it definitely didn't work against Coventry. But like I said, styles, it's a bit like boxing, really. You know, styles make fights. I think with the right setup and the right lineup, Gary O'Neill can get us a result away at Villa on Saturday. It's going to be difficult because they're a good side, but you've got to take into account Villa have lost four at last five at home.
Yeah.
Got John McGinn, who's out suspended. Mateus Kasovic is out for 3 weeks. They're not a great side, but like I just mentioned with Gary O'Neill, Unai Emery's got a good way of setting teams up to get results. And
they're a very annoying team, Villa. They're a very annoying team. You never watch them and think, oh, they're a good team. But they always
looked like a top four side all season, have they? Yet they've been effective enough to get the points to get there.
They're annoyingly efficient as a football team.
So
it was your sort of main concerns from that Villa lineup, based on the fact that I've said Matt Cash is out injured for 3 weeks, John McGinn suspended, Ollie Watkins I still think he's one of the most highest fantasy Premier League point scorers this season, so he's going to be
what we're going for up top, what we're going to go with, what do you think?
Billy, who I feature on the 12th man podcast with, sent me a predicted lineup of Emi Martinez with a back four of Ezri Konsa right back, Diego Carlos and Pau Torres centre halves with Luca Digne or Alex Moreno left back, a midfield four of Bailey and Rogers on the wings, with Tielemans and Douglas Luiz in the centre, with Watkins and Diaby up front, which that could sort of lead to a sort of 4-2-4 or 4-3-3 based on with and without the ball. Excuse me. So you look at that lineup, the midfield battles, where it's going to be won on Saturday. As good as I always have rated Youri Tielemans. I was disappointed when he went to Villa on a free transfer. Douglas Luiz keeps on being linked to Arsenal every few transfer windows. But João Gomes and Mario Lemina are back to get the better of those two on Saturday, Tom.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with what you just said. The midfield wins you the game. I think Gomes, you know, as he is, pit bull. I think he'll be all over the pitch. I think it'll be good for him to play against Luiz. I think he'll go one-on-one with him. So that'll be a battle of the Brazilians. And then Lemina is just powerhouse. I could see him being all over Tielemans. I have rated Tielemans. I liked him at Leicester. But I think sometimes he can lack tracking back. He's not as much as a box-to-box to what he used to be, I don't think. So that's where I think Lemina has more on him. And Tommy Doyle, if Tommy Doyle comes in, I think both of them players have it over him, have more legs than him. So, yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I definitely think the midfield wins the game, but I think we've got enough to win over their midfield, personally.
Still on mute, mate.
Still on mute.
Because of your cough.
Yeah, trying to avoid getting this cough involved in this show. Sorry, guys. My main concern for this game on Saturday is how much more pace they've got in the transition compared to us, like mentioned, us lacking Pedro Neto. When we do turn them over, you haven't got that break quick, have you? If Matheus Cunha can sort of... I mean, I'm talking about Matheus Cunha starting in, and in the back of my mind, I'm not even sure whether he's even going to feature on Saturday. The videos that they've put out in the last day or so where he's only doing sort of light running. I don't know whether he's even done any contact training yet. I don't know whether this game's going to come too soon for him, and maybe it's another case of playing mind games with Villa that he might play. But like I mentioned, just Mark Robbins or Unai Emery, I don't think they're going to change Villa, regardless whether he starts or not. It's just disappointing, like I said, the amount of players that we've got injured, because I feel like going to Villa with a full-strength side, even if they had McGinn and Matty Cash available, I still think we could get a good result there with a full-strength lineup. And this is why it's so disheartening. It's come at the worst time of the season. Ollie Watkins is going to be a handful. Moussa Diaby, I thought, was a really, really good sign. He hasn't really hit the ground running, whereas Leon Bailey in recent months hasn't he, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I think no matter how good Villa are, you know, whether top four or whether there was in 18th place, I think derby games are completely different to any other game. I've always said that. I think there'll be a lot of challenges where we'll cancel out their counter-attack. As you say, us on the counter-attack, on the other hand, without Neto, it's more of a build-up, more than a straight like pass and go. I think we'll have to have a long amount of possession for us to get out a chance. But I think it just depends how we set up. And like you said, the midfield just wins you the game, really. But I think the main thing for us is winning the ball back when we lose it. I think that's what we'll be good at. I think that's what will win us the game. Because I feel like as much as how quick they are on the transition, I think with the likes of Gomes, Lemina, Doyle, etc. in the midfield, I think they'll shut that down. They'll be told to shut that down the most you can. Take a booking if you have to stop them attacking, really. So I think that's going to win us the game, cancelling their transition.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult game. I think the biggest dilemma, and I wouldn't want to be in Gary O'Neill's shoes when he has to pick the decision, but Josh has made the comments, obviously in the YouTube comments, surely you're going Ryan Aitnori, Cunha, even on one leg, and Sarabia up front on Saturday. Let's just take Matheus Cunha out the mindset for the moment. Leon Chuamo or Nathan Fraser, Dean, where are you going there?
I'm sticking Doc up front.
It keeps on being talked about. we haven't had a Matt Doherty number 9 role yet, and it's got to happen soon or later.
He keeps getting closer.
Even Ward got the winner at Anfield. Doherty's got to be given the run out of number 9 at some point.
I think in seriousness, I think it depends. Obviously, Leon's been away with the age groups for England, so he's not going to be completely fresh. You don't want to overwork him. So
I mean, he scored the winner, didn't he, the other day? He's been playing regular football for our under 21s, under 23. He's been playing for England. So match sharpness, he can't be far away, but it's still that physicality when he comes against top European quality defenders like Diego Carlos and Pau Torres.
I think the problem I see is that even if we do, whichever one of them we play, and if you play them with Sarabia, I do think he'll go with the three midfield. I think he'll go with Lamina in this hybrid because he wants that security in the midfield of Lamina coming in. So I think our best chance of goals is going to be set pieces. I don't see us creating much from open play with the just Sarabia. Unless you've got Semedo and Aitnouri bombing on, that's going to be a good way to attack. But I think I'd probably go Fraser because he's been around the team longer. He knows the patterns a little bit more. I think that's probably where he'll go. He'll go Sarabia, Fraser, and then play all three of them in the middle, Lamina, Gomez and Doyle.
I'm going Leon Chuamo up front. I feel like you've already mentioned it, Dean. I don't think the players around Nathan Fraser trust him. Leon Chuamo has just come off scoring a winner for England. I know he's still young. I think he's only a year younger than Nathan Fraser, though.
Yeah, he's got more pace about him than Fraser. And that's what we really miss. I'm just trying to think what Gary would do. I think, me personally, I like the threat that Chuamo gives you a little bit more than Fraser. Fraser's more physical, but Chuamo's still a big enough lad and he's got more pace about him. So I can definitely see that. But I would personally think that Gary will go the Fraser option instead.
I think he'll go with Fraser as well. But I think as much as both of these players are extremely young, I think you can already see the differences they've got from the Coventry game. You know, Fraser was limited with the amount of service he had and what he had in the game. But I think as well, especially when you look at like when he played against Blackpool and Brentford, you do have a little bit more space on the ball. As when it was Coventry, he consistently had a man on his shirt, on his shoulder. And I think it takes a lot to deal with that. But I think when Chuamo come on, you could see he was a lot faster than Fraser. But I think they've still got a long way to come. I think, especially with Chuamo just scoring for England, it's going to be a lot for him to go from St George's Park to Villa Park in a big derby. So I think Gary will go with Fraser because he pretty much has to, really. I don't think Cunha's going to be ready. Haven't heard anything about Bellegarde either, so I think he'll go with Fraser, Sarabia, and maybe Aitnouri up top, and then maybe Hugo Bueno at left back, maybe like we saw in the Coventry game.
Gary O'Neill's said a few times, hasn't he? He still doesn't see Ryan Aitnouri in this left wing position, which, based on the last few games where we've but it's mainly the Coventry game, isn't it? Until sort of like Ryan Aitnouri pushed a bit more further forward, he's had no sort of attacking intended way. Not sure whether it was, I think it might have been Tom who mentioned just that it's probably going to be down to set pieces. And there was a reason why I put Totti Gomez as this week's thumbnail Wolves player because, you know, he scored a winner against these before. Hopefully he'll do it again on Saturday. But this is the part of the show where I hate the most. What's your score prediction for the game on Saturday, Tom? Aston Villa versus Wolves at 5:30 on Sky Sports Main Event.
I said it earlier today. I'm going to say smash and grab. Last minutes of the game, 1-0 Wolves.
Dean, where's your money at? João Gomes to be booked.
Yeah.
Douglas Luiz to be booked. I should have done that flipping side, that builder thing again. Before the Coventry game.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1, I think. I think 1-1, I'd be happy with that. I can't see us keeping a clean sheet. We've gone into the little ruck of not being able to keep them very often again.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Obviously, on social media, since he scored against Brentford in the FA Cup replay, we were pushing, you know, release the Tiger for Nathan Fraser. In our WhatsApp group the other day, I'm not sure everyone knows, Leon Chuamo is from Brighton. And what do Seagulls do, guys? They shit on the Villa. So I'm going 2-1 Wolves on Saturday, and Leon Chuamo going to score the winner.
You got that video to close out with that lady singing in the boring?
Nah, I should. Like I said, man flu's battered me. I've rushed this show together tonight. To be fair, I mean, I didn't even send the link until flipping quarter past eight, whatever it was. Yeah, it's going to be tough on Saturday. I'll be going to the game. I'll be in Birmingham City Centre from early, trying to get rid of this last bit of man flu on the spirit. So hopefully we can get a good result. Thanks to everyone who's joined us on the Wolves Fancast match preview with myself, Dean and Tom. We'll be back on Sunday with a review of the match. So yeah, check us out at Wolves Fancast across YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And as usual, we end our preview shows with a music act. This is a good friend of mine, Pogman. He's a big Wolves fan, recently moved to America. He had a song track that was called Chin Ups, which came about a week ago. This Friday, he has an EP called Music That I Like to Make, Volume 1. Pre-save it on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to music. As I said, Pogman, big Wolves fan. Thanks for joining us. Have a good weekend and shit on the Villa, because Leon Chihuahua is a Brighton seagull, and this is what seagulls do. They shit on the Villa. Good night. Let's go.